Call the meeting to order. First item of business is the approval of minutes from the January 18th meeting. Representative De La Forest, having thoroughly reviewed those, you prepared to move the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative De La Forest. Any comments, questions, concerns? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Next up is my bill, so I will pass the gavel along to Representative Lilly, and we'll get on with its House File 116.
Well, welcome, Chair Atkins, to your committee.
Thank you. I'm sure this is an excellent committee, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to be here. I will move House File 116 as it's a committee report, that it be passed and referred to the Public Safety and Civil Justice Committee.
Okay. So, Chair Atkins has moved his bill, and so welcome. You want to tell us about it, sir?
I would be happy to. Just to shape it up, the first, I've got an oral amendment on line 1.3 of the bill where it indicates prescribing a criminal penalty. There is no criminal penalty, so I would ask that those four words, prescribing a criminal penalty, be deleted.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And ask
for Is there any questions on that or any discussion related to that amendment offered? So hearing none, do we need to move that, right? And okay, so all in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? So the amendment passes, and go ahead with your amended bill. Sir.
Thank you. We're almost there, Mr. Chair. One other motion to is the A1 amendment you will find in your packets. I've been doing my best to work with some of the folks that have call centers and have come a long way in terms of language, I think, since we started with this a year and a half or 2 years ago now. The A1 amendment is an additional effort to try to give them some comfort in terms of this bill not overreaching, and I would want to get this bill into the shape that I hope to proceed with it. So I'd move the A1 amendment, and I'm not sure if there's going to be any testimony. I assume you'll ask for it. But.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any questions here up front, or any comments or anything from the public here? Any comments? I don't see anybody. Looks like looks like everybody's okay with the A1 amendment. I'm gonna. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please vote aye. Or those in favor? Sorry. Okay. All those opposed? Okay. So A1, you've got amended bill before us, 116. So go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And the only other thing that I'd point out before I get underway is that there is testimony that was given before the division by Lee Grotchik from the Minnesota Senior Federation. I won't read that into the record. It's relatively brief, however, and I'd ask that you take a quick look at it. This Minnesota Senior Federation does endorse the House File 116. I can tell you about the bill relatively rapidly. It applies to the foreign-based call centers, and it simply requires that they tell you the truth. As Representative Filthy said in the division, what's the big deal? All it's doing is saying tell the truth, and it what it does is that if you are contacted by or in contact with a call center and you ask the operator where they're located, they have to tell you. Secondly, and more importantly, if they have a U.S.-based location for which to send private data, financial information, credit information, medical documents, if they have that location and you ask them about that, they have to tell you that and give you the opportunity to send it there. If they do not, then you don't have that option. But at least you get to ask those two questions, and if they have the opportunity to send that, then you can send it to the U.S.-based location. whether it is a couple of the issues that have come up during the course of this bill moving ahead. One is it a problem? And the answer is yes. And I wouldn't say it's exclusively a problem abroad. I don't mean to insult our friends anywhere in Canada, Mexico, Malaysia, Philippines, wherever they have call centers. But the problem with that, and by the way, I brought along, it took me 10 minutes to get three articles about Social Security numbers and credit cards and all sorts of information being sold abroad. So this is an issue. I'm not saying that doesn't happen in this country. My point is that at least here we can go after it. And that's what this prescribes, is it allows for penalties either by private action or by the Attorney General so that you can pursue those. The problem with trying to pursue it abroad is that we don't, our Attorney General doesn't work there. And our private causes of action don't work there as well. So this requires that that information be disclosed. If it's not disclosed, then it gives you a cause of action to proceed with. That's a brief introduction of the bill. There is some testimony, I know, by our friends from the communication workers as well as by the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and Minnesota retailers. And unless there's questions at this point, we'd be happy to take any questions that there may be. But I'd invite those that desire to testify to come down and share their thoughts with you, and then we'll be happy to walk through questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any questions before we go forward with any more testimony? Okay. So, yeah, please come out. Welcome. Can you state your name, please, for the record? And so we're going to hear Chair Atkins' testimony for the one side now, and then those that possibly want to hear the other side heard, we'll hear that in a few minutes. So go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tim Loveson. I am the president of the Communication Workers of America Minnesota State Council, and we support House File 116. As was stated, consumers should have the right to know whom they're given personal information to and in which company, country it's being collected in, and to choose if they want to give that personal information. Currently, they do not. And that's the thrust of this bill. And one other thing I want to point out about this bill is the consumer is the one that has to initiate the action. This is not an onus that the companies or these call centers have to say where they're at unless they're asked by the A1 amendment now if by a Minnesota resident. And the same goes for asking for an alternative location in the United States to give their personal or financial information. They have to initiate it, and by an alternative, it could be a call center or it could be a website. And we don't believe that that's asking too much out of the business community to allow people to do that. Just as a for instance, I brought up Mike Wynn. Mike is with the Communication Workers of America and an employee of Quest. And he tells a good story. On the weekends, they deal with a call center in Malaysia. Now, during the week, when they deal with the call centers, they have no problems. They get the stuff done as far as the information. It's real smooth. But I'm going to let Mike tell you what they're asked on the weekends when they deal with this call center in Malaysia, what they're asked before they can do the work for their customers. So, Mike, if you'd introduce yourself and then...
Hi, I'm Mike Wynn.
Thank you, Mr. Levinson. Yeah, go ahead, please introduce yourself.
I'm Mike Wynn with TWA, public coordinator. I work for one of the phone companies as a high-speed internet technician. During the week, our calls go to Boise and Salt Lake City. We have no issues. We call them. They ask for the customer's phone number. We give them the phone number. They give them the information that we ask for. Basically, the only information that we ask for is a quick connect code to install their modem onto their computer. Sometimes the letters get lost, they don't get delivered, so we have to call in to get them. On the weekends, when we call in and talk to somebody over in Malaysia, they ask for the phone number and the last four digits of the customer's social security number. As a technician, I don't want nothing to do with the customer's social security number at all. Usually at that point, I either hand the phone over to the customer, and then I talk to that person for a good 20 minutes before we get that code. Or I can go off my truck and go get it, you know, off our website. But it's a lot easier if we can just call it in and ask for that quote.
Mr. Chairman, this is a problem that, in talking to Mike, that the company is trying to work out. But it's just something that I, you know, want to point out that we see in our industry, that sometimes we're not sure if the companies really know exactly what these call centers are asking for when they subcontract off this work. So that's one of our concerns, is a lot of times when things are subcontracted out, offshored, as these call centers are, some of this information is being asked for that probably the businesses that have subcontracted don't even know that it's being asked for. So I wanted to bring that up as an example. With that, that's pretty much our testimony. We think it's a very straightforward bill, and we appreciate your support in passing this consumer's right to know information.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Witt and Mr. Levinson. Any questions for the testifiers? We got a couple of questions, so stay tuned over there. Go ahead, Mr. De La Forest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I had a question for Mr. Levinson.
Yeah.
I had a phone call about this. This is really a question that was just brought up a few minutes ago. I received a call from a constituent who is a naturalized citizen here in the United States, lives in my district, works in customer service, and is frequently on the phone. And he has an accent. He's a native speaker of Spanish. Mm-hmm. And he said that it's difficult for him a lot of times because people perceive that he's operating from a call center located outside the United States because of his accent, even though he is a legal U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder, doesn't this bill in some way contribute to that sort of attitude and that sort of intolerance, and that we all know common sense, using some common sense, that the way people perceive that a phone call or that the person serving them is outsourced or located outside the United States is through audio. You don't see the person and you hear an accent. And I'm wondering what your response would be, as opposed to, say, a call center that might be located, might have been outsourced to Winnipeg, where people talk like we do, or like Rukavina. I'm wondering this. I'm not sure either, Representative Mahoney, but I'm curious as to your thoughts about that. This gentleman called me up and said that was a concern he had, that this bill sort of lends the approval of the legislature to some of those attitudes that I think we would all agree are not the right kind of attitudes that we ought to be promoting.
Mr. Chairman, if I could answer that. Well, nothing in this bill, we hope, doesn't lend to that. It just says that, if they're asked, if they say that it's in the United States, that's it. That's the end of it. But I'm going to go a little further with this. And if you've ever seen this documentary done by Bill Moyer, it was on Channel 2, and we had copies of it at the last session. We had a video of it and that we handed out to many of the representatives. You want to talk about how the problem started? Is the call centers, when they first started on these offshore, they were using deception to sell the American public that they actually were in the United States. They trained the people to know what was going on with that customer that was calling them, where they were from. They would have on their computer, it would come up, you're talking to from somebody from Minneapolis. Oh, I see that it's really cold outside today, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. And, oh, I see that the Wild won last night. It's a good game. Yeah, you get to see it. Yeah, whatever. So they had stuff on their computer to tell you, or to tell the person at the call center, this is where you're calling, this is what's going on in their town, for so that they know, they think that you're just down the street. So the deception was actually started by the call centers that were offshore. I'm sorry that it what we're trying to do is just say, wait a second, you got to know who you're talking to because of the possibility of identity theft in a foreign country. And as Representative Atkins says, is if it's your identity's stolen overseas, good luck. It's hard enough in the United States. So I understand what you're saying, but that isn't the intent of this bill. And if they say they're in the United States, that's the end of it.
Okay. Representative De La Forest, you have...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a follow-up question. I would wholeheartedly agree, I think the committee would, sir, that consumer fraud and operating below board is certainly something that the state of Minnesota shouldn't tolerate. But if the question here is identity theft and business practices that are below board, haven't we already addressed this in statutes? We have extensive consumer fraud statutes here in Minnesota that provide criminal penalties for such things as even deceptive advertising or defrauding a consumer when selling them a good or a service or dealing with them in the course of commerce. I hear what you're saying, but it seems to me our statutes already adequately address this issue, and I'm not sure how the legislation before us furthers the very laudable public policy goal of protecting people from identity theft.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what Communication Workers of America feel is that this bill is actually one of customer awareness. The customer is aware of who and where who they're talking to and where they're located before they give personal information out. That they need to know this before they make that decision. That's the way the communication workers see it.
Okay, Chair Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative DeLaForest, I just wanted to quote, it's too bad Mr. Grotchik from the Minnesota Senior Federation couldn't be here, but he had a great line in his short comments on Friday. And what he said is, the more miles you drive a car increases the likelihood of an accident. The greater distance information travels increases the likelihood of identity theft and fraud. And I don't exactly know that if that's true, but I do know that if it gets beyond the borders of the United States, and I might add, as far as accents go, I think most folks that I talk to abroad, they speak better than I do in terms of speaking English. That's got nothing to do with the issue. The point is that we don't have the ability to enforce it as well when the information gets abroad. And to ask people to tell the truth, essentially, about where they're at, and if they have a U.S.-based location to send their information, I don't think is asking too much. And hopefully it's an ounce of prevention, so that you talk about we've got these laws that can bust people for stuff. I'd rather try to prevent it from happening in the first place. So that's the purpose of the bill.
Okay. No more questions? Okay. Representative Zellers, go ahead with your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Lavasin. After hearing Chair Atkins' description, I'm really at a loss, because we were talking and you brought in a guest about customer service and being able to make sure that the customers, their service is getting done in a proper amount of time. And I'm just wondering in here, in the bill that we're talking about, when you talk about a timely manner of getting customer service taken care of, if it is a weekend and the right call center for the Social Security number or router approval, whatever it may be, the router serial number, if that's closed and it's a Saturday and, God forbid the cable's out and Dora the Explorer's on and my daughter wants to watch it, it's not going to be on and he can't call a domestic call center to get that done. He's now wasted the call trip. He's wasted my time setting up an appointment. And in the end, my cable still doesn't work, or my modem or router, whatever you were discussing, sir. So I guess I'm a little bit of a loss. Maybe that was a tangent that we got off in the discussion, but as a communications worker representative, I'm not sure how that jives.
Chair Atkins?
If I might, I think that may have been a bit of a stretch for what the bill does, Representative Zellers. What the bill does is essentially what I described for Representative DeLaForest, which is it requires folks to tell you where they are if you ask, and if they've got a U.S.-based place to send it. I think what they were illustrating is that the rules may be a little bit more lax. I don't know that for sure, but I do know that this rule will apply if we put it in place. And the main thing is to have a U.S.-based location to send your information to. That's what it does.
Representative Zellers, do you still want Mr. Levison, or are you happy with Mr. Chair Atkins?
On that question, I'll yield, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
For now.
Representative Burns?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the comments about identity theft. I am a former felony prosecutor, and I had to deal with those issues, and they're devastating for people. It's really, really affects people. And so I appreciate your concern there. But I just want to also make sure we don't mislead our folks, our seniors, too. This bill doesn't prevent any information from going overseas. So the way it would prevent identity theft would be, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Mr. Chair, we would have an individual call in talk to someone and say, where are you at? That person would say, I'm in India. And then the customer would then say, I don't want to talk to you or don't want to give you my information. That's essentially how we prevent identity theft? Because I guess I'm not seeing it here.
Oh, that's fair. Just Chair Representative Burns, it's the next step that's the important one. Knowing where somebody is, they could be in Canada or Milwaukee, but the main thing is they've got to disclose where they're at. It's the next step that's the most important, and what the bill requires is then if the consumer asks, you have a U.S., and there's financial data, or credit data, or medical information that's being sought or exchanged, if they have a U.S.-based location in, you know, maybe it's up on the North Shore, we got a lot of call centers now up north, that I have the choice to send it there if they have a location there rather than send it to Canada or to Mexico or wherever else in the world. And I personally, and I think most consumers would feel a little bit more comfortable, I bet you would too, sending your information to, we've got one in South St. Paul, there's a call center there. I'd feel more comfortable sending it to South St. Paul than to Singapore.
And I thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative.
And this is a part where I'm having a hard time figuring it out. It says that the customer has a right to request an alternative option. It doesn't say the customer has a right to receive an alternative option. Okay. So then, what my question really is that provision, which is fraud according to the statute, how do you punish, or how do you actually convict or find someone accountable for fraud the way it's written? I don't see the punishment. Oh, sorry.
Good point. Mr. Chair, Representative Burns, that was actually some of the language that I worked with the industry folks on. Originally it did. It said they had to have a U.S.-based location to send it. And if they failed to give you that location so that you could send your information there, then that was the crime, or that was the offense, which you'd then have the ability to either go through the Attorney General's office or pursue damages. This is softer language. I'll grant you that. And I suspect that when the industry folks get down here, they're probably going to be a little concerned about your comment, because they're going to be afraid that now I'm going to amend it back to the tougher language. The goal here was just, it's disclosure, folks. If we let consumers know, I'm kind of, believe it or not looking to have government put the thumb down on everybody else, but disclosure is pretty good. You know, just tell us where you're located, tell us if you've got someplace around here that I can send my information, and it'll make me, and then they can make a conscious decision whether they want to do that. They might say, no, I still don't want to send it to wherever. But should they fail to provide that location, refuse to provide that location, that would be the offense. Or if they tell you, you know what, we just don't have a place in the U.S., so your option is either to send it to pick a country abroad or not to send it at all. At least they get that choice.
Representative Burns, are you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Anderson, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, earlier you had mentioned that you have three articles that you have been using as a resource. Is it possible to have the pages and copies of those so they could be distributed to the members? I'd be curious to see them.
Can I... Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the reason I didn't do that is because after I got done with Friday's hearing, there was a concern that I was just bashing the integrity of foreign call centers, and I don't intend to do that. It's about disclosure. It's about giving consumers a right to know. I'd be happy to have copies of them made, and rather, I actually read from them on Friday. And made it. There's a lot of good folks here that represent call centers, and my purpose was not to point out all of their shortcomings and make everybody really scared. But what I'd suggest is, why don't I make copies or have copies made? I'll have them delivered to all the members, and if you have follow-up concerns. And actually, I believe it's going to go to Chair Mulery's committee on Tuesday. So if there are additional follow-up questions or concerns, I'm happy to take them in between when the bill travels from here to there as well. Would that be okay?
Representative Anderson, is there any follow-up?
Or? Well, I have a couple other questions here.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm just curious, when someone, say they receive a call center that happens to be in another country, have they ever been refused that information? Do you have statistics that show that they've been refused that information?
Chair Atkins?
And Representative Anderson, I know I was once. That's just anecdotal. Do I have exact data? I don't think anybody has exact data. And oftentimes in situations like these where we're simply requiring disclosure, you're not going to have exact data. But good question, but I don't think that there is a a great storage house of data with respect to it.
Representative Anderson, we want to go ahead. No, that's fine. We just want to hear the other side too. So
sure.
go ahead.
I think we are, Mr. Chair.
Oh yeah.
and I forgot your name. I'm sorry.
Mike Wynn.
Mr. Wynn, just one question for you. Explain again. You were calling the call center on a weekend, and you were asking for a code that you had to get for an individual's modem. Wouldn't there be a concern of security, and doesn't it make sense that they would be asking for some kind of identification to make sure that they aren't giving this out willy-nilly to anybody?
Basically,
Mr. Witt, go ahead.
The security is, when I call, I usually call the customer's home number, so it comes up with their home number on their caller ID. They ask me about the customer's address, phone number, and the person that's on the account. That stuff was all on my repair ticket or my order. That's fine. I can give them all that information because it's right in front of me. The Social Security number, the last four digits, I usually don't want anything to do with it because some people use that for like a PIN number or whatever. So there's no need for me to know that. Usually I just hand off the phone to the customer, and it takes about 20 more minutes for them to get that code. Explain to them who they are, last four digits, mother's maiden name, all that stuff. But when we call our Boise Center, they see all that information. When we call, they see the number come up. I verify my identity with my tech number and my employee number.
Mm-hmm.
So they know I work for the company. So there's no need for the knowing that the customer's the last four digits, because it's not anything secured that anybody can steal off their computer or anything. It's just a code to connect their computer with our internet. That's it.
Just so we're clear, that does go beyond a little bit what the scope of this bill does, but you'll get the opportunity because this Social Security disability or Social Security number bill, I think Representative Hillstrom has, the Attorney General's bill is coming to this committee, so we'll be talking about Social Security numbers a lot. And I guess I shouldn't have sent mine over the internet to my uncle in Nigeria died. So I sent my bank account and my Social Security number, and I'm getting $30 million. So you aren't going to have all you guys, everybody in the room. But with that, in deference to our friends from the Chamber and from the Minnesota Retailers, unless there's other questions, I think we should give them an opportunity as well.
Are you okay, Representative Anderson? Okay. Well, thank you. I'm sorry I changed your name to Mr. Wynn and the... Is that right now?
Yep.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, and stick around, and Mr. Levinson.
Thank you.
We'll have some more. Looks like on the other side, we have first up is Buzz, Mr. Anderson. Can we go with nicknames for the record? I don't have many names, but I... Well, thank you, Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Buzz Anderson. You probably don't know what my real name is, and I doubt that many people in the room do, but somebody over here knows it, but it's usually a well-kept secret.
Do you want us to announce it, sir?
We can save it. Okay. Save it for a surprise at another meeting.
Luckily, our staff is very much on the ball, and that's been provided for us.
All right.
Go ahead, Mr. Anderson. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Atkins, my good friend, and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I've already given testimony in a prior committee, so I've tried to whittle this down to as little as possible, so I'll be as brief as I can. I want to first, though, on the record, thank Representative Atkins for working with us to resolve some of the concerns we had in the bill. And he's been very open and honest and cooperative through this whole process. So I don't want the moment to pass without making that part of the record.
Does that conclude your testimony?
I have just a couple more things to say, Mr. Chair. And Representative Atkins, let me begin by saying that Minnesota has been on the cutting edge of promoting international trade since Governor Perpich was governor back in the 1970s, and every governor since then has heralded his efforts and has continued to replicate those efforts, because I think they all realize that it's not our state, it's not our nation, the world is really our marketplace. Governor Pawlenty, in his first term, traveled to Canada, Poland, the Czech Republic, China, and this October he's planning a trip to India. So the genie is out of the bottle, and we know that the world is in fact our marketplace. But with that generalization, let me tell you more specifically what concerns us about the bill. Number one, the bill ignores the reality of what companies have to do in today's marketplace in order to stay competitive. I know of a company that's located in Minnesota that handled 45 million calls last year. They have call centers in Minnesota. They have call centers in other places in the United States. They have call centers in other places around the world because they're an international company. Their decision on where to locate call centers depends on a lot of things. Cost, the type of expertise that's accessible, the availability of technology, time zone differences, access to growing markets. Some just use out-of-state or out-of-country call centers to supplement their Minnesota call centers at peak times. Number two, there's also the possibility of unintended consequences when restrictions like this are put into place. Making additional demands on existing call centers may encourage companies to move call centers located here to other locations, or it may in fact negatively impact a company's decision to move here in the first place. The result would be fewer jobs in Minnesota. I'm told by the International Technology Assistance Association, located in Washington, D.C., that the American IT industry is the strongest in the world, and it's already running at a multi-billion dollar trade surplus. The IT industry is not like automobile or textiles, which are running huge, massive trade deficits. Number three, an additional problem that the ITAA points out is that they've indicated that state-level statutes could be challenged on the grounds that they are unconstitutionally infringing on the federal government's power to regulate commerce. Now, I'm not a lawyer. That's what they tell me. So the lawyers will have to debate that one. I just want to put it on the record. Number four, one of the things that I've really come to appreciate in my current position as president of retailers is that we live in a free market system, and what happens in a free market system is that people vote every time they make a purchase decision. The call center is an extension of a company's brand, and if somebody has a bad experience with a company's call center, that affects their impression of the company's brand. And if they have a bad impression of the company's brand, they're going to vote with their pocketbook in another place, in another way. That's going to hurt the financial bottom line of these companies. My point is that the marketplace does a great job of regulating this activity without any direction from the legislature. So it does it through the marketplace, and it does it very efficiently. Number five, there's also no evidence to demonstrate that call centers out of the United States are less safe than call centers in the United States. Federal regulations require businesses to provide comprehensive privacy protection to personal customer information that the users share, regardless of whether they have a call center located inside or outside the United States. So it's not just the customer that's watching. There's also strong federal regulations that regulate this. Lastly, let me say that the Information Technology Association has indicated to me that this legislation has been introduced in many states, but it is not passed in any for the very reasons that I've tried to point out here. With the greatest respect to the author and with great deference to my friends in the CWA, I'd ask you to reject the bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Anderson. Is there any questions for the witness before we go on to next witness? Okay, looks like you're stick around. Might have some more later. I'd like to invite down Mr. Hesse from the Minnesota Chamber. Welcome, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And the Minnesota Chamber represents about 2,400 businesses throughout the state. 80% of our members have fewer than 100 employees, and we're also affiliated with about 130 local chambers around the state. We, too, appreciate working with the chair over the last couple of years on some various changes to this bill. The one that was adopted today does address a couple of the operating issues that I raised at the last committee hearing. However, we still at this point cannot support the bill due to a couple of issues. So one, the cost that it will impose on customer call centers, and second, the inconvenience that we think it will result for consumers. Before I get to those reasons, I want to reiterate a couple of things that Mr. Anderson said. And first, in my view, this is not a bill about identity theft or protecting against identity theft. Simply stated, the information that company call centers, whether or not they're located within the United States or outside the United States, operate is protected in the same fashion, in the same manner, no matter where that call center is located. Under current state and federal law, businesses, again, have to have this same high level of security for their information, whether or not a...
Excuse me, Mr. Hesse. Everybody kind of check their phones. The buzzing is probably one of us. I don't know. Chair Atkins? No. Sorry for the interruption. Call center. India. No, but go ahead, sir. Sorry to interrupt.
Again, they have to maintain the same high level of security no matter where they're located. So customers, call centers outside the U.S. and inside the U.S. have the same security procedures in place. I think consumers can be confident that in the event that they do have an incident, that they will be made whole. Current federal law also provides remedies where individuals will receive compensation or be made whole in the event that, their identity is stolen or something happens. But again, we think there are two, probably three main issues remaining with the bill. And first, it does inconvenience customers and add costs to call centers and operations. First, oftentimes when companies have more than one call center, they route the call to the one with the shortest waiting time, which could be overseas, it could be within the U.S. If that center happens to be outside the United States, wait times will generally be longer, and as the customer, potentially exercises their right under this bill to ask where that location is and potentially ask for a transfer or some other alternative option. When those types of transfers aren't possible, customers will spend more time on the phone still asking, trying to inquire why is this remedy not available to me, especially if this bill is publicized greatly. For our members, longer wait times really means longer or more costs. We've got one member that estimates that every second added to a customer service phone call could add millions of dollars worth of expense per year because they take enormous number of calls per day and per year. Another member has a $500,000 per year cost placed on this bill, plus the system costs that they will have to incur to implement some of the changes in the bill. And furthermore, these costs don't really provide any benefit to the consumer. The same information will be given at the end of the day. The same questions will be answered. It'll just take longer, and it will cost the companies more. The last issue I'd like to raise, again, Mr. Anderson touched on briefly, and it is trade issues, and we believe that restrictions that require or even suggest that there that other options have to be made available for calls to be redirected from overseas to domestic call centers discriminate against the current trade agreements that the U.S. has entered into. And I know that this issue came up when a similar bill was debated in New Jersey. Not only the European Union and even Canada were concerned or following the bill because they, again, think it provided discriminatory treatment against operations in their countries and regions. We think that's one of the reasons why this legislation has not been adopted in any other state. We, again, think the bill seems to ignore the realities of the global marketplace. And we just, again, think that there are some remaining issues with the bill that we just, at this point, we just cannot support it. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hesse. Any questions for the testifier? No questions. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Tilbury?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. Question that I have is... you had mentioned that it could cost millions of dollars if you have to, in a year's time, if a call gets replaced to a different, or routed to a different spot and so on, with wait times and whatever. But I'm just wondering, what is the concern for the consumer at this point. I didn't get the feeling that that was really an issue from your testimony, that it was more important with the bottom line than maybe someone's identity and so on. So that I just wanted a little clarification on where does the consumer fit in it, because I'm sure the consumer would wait for that time if they requested it. So I think it's just a little bit over on the end of losing millions of dollars.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tilbury.
Mr. Hesse.
Again, we don't believe this bill provides any increased protection for customers. The current federal and state laws on identity theft and other other areas provide the protection for consumers with respect to identity theft. We just don't believe this affects that one bit. Those laws are in place today and will be protecting customers. They protect the customers now and into the future. So, again, we believe that what this bill does is place added costs and costs to employers and inconveniences to consumers without that added any added protection whatsoever with respect to identity theft or other security issues.
Okay. Representative Tilburg, do you have any further questions?
No.
Okay. Representative Dominguez, got a...
Mr. Chair, I think my question was on the same line. I think we were thinking the same thing. And I guess the bottom line here, I guess we were thinking about the consumer and not so much the $1 million that the companies would save. You know, this kind of theft thing, I think we have to be careful about. But in your speech here, I think you were more on the company side than the consumer side. And am I right or wrong, or is... Could you tell me a little more?
Maybe Mr. Hesse.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative Dominguez, one, I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Our members are businesses that operate, among other things, call centers. So my view is obviously going to reflect their position on legislation. However, having said that, our businesses protect customer information. They know if they don't, they're, one, going to lose customers, two, going to lose money because they will certainly be sought after if something happens with the data that they control. So it's not certainly not good business practice to allow the customer data that you have to be breached. So we take security and consumers very seriously. That's how we can maintain customers and grow.
Thank you, Mr. Hesse. Looks like we got some more questions. Representative De La Forest, go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I had one brief question for Mr. Hesse that Representatives Tilbury and Dominguez raised for me. Let's assume that costs are increased for a business to comply with this bill. Whatever that cost may be, and knowing that we have minimum profit margins for businesses here in a capitalist economy, is it likely with these increased costs that they're all going to be absorbed by the company, or will they be passed on to the consumer in some form with higher fees and costs?
Mr. Chair, Representative DeForest, there's likely to be a combination of the two. I think the couple of options are that one, fees or costs will increase to customers. Second, there certainly could be a reduction in shareholder wealth. They might take it out of the bottom line. And third option is, like anything else, out of employees. There might be less money available for wages, benefits, et cetera.
Thank you, Mr. Hesse. Anything further, Mr. De La Forest?
No, thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Burns, Representative Burns, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll get this down here. I'm trying.
Yeah. And I do also have a follow-up as well based on the questions. Currently, you do have to comply with the number of federal regulations to protect consumers. Like you said, if you don't, your consumers leave you, and also you get in trouble as a company. But where you are right now, where we sit right now as Minnesotans, there's nothing currently in place that would prevent any customer from asking on any phone call where the person is located, or if to be transferred to a Minnesota location. So that we can do that right now. And my question then is, are you aware of any industry standard operating procedure where people regularly lie?
Is that a question for the lawyer or for
Mr. Hesse?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burns, you're correct that that people can ask currently whether where a call center is located, and companies will generally tell you that. And I don't think I really have to answer the third part of that question.
Thank you, Mr. Hesse. Any further questions, Representative Burns?
No, thank you.
Okay. Representative Tilbury?
Thank you, Chair. I do understand the concept that if expenses are accrued on the company, it gets passed on to the customer. But that's also speculation on your part, too, of how much it would cost. Just as much as it's speculation of how many people will ask this question. And I don't think either way we can determine the amount of calls that would be made or how much it really would cost. So I think that, to say that you're going to lose money on this deal to a certain extent would be inaccurate, just as much as I would say if 100,000 phone calls are going to be having to be redirected because they're going to ask. Would that be correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tilbury, all I know is when we asked the question to some of our members about cost of complying with legislation like this, that was the response I received. I can follow up and try to figure out more about how those numbers were derived. Those are the numbers that I received from our members.
Representative Tilbury?
Because I would expect that the customer's comfort with this and this, trust in the company and so on would also be a factor that you'd want for your company. If they have the perception that they're being sent off someplace they don't know anything about, they could be a little nervous about leaving some information. So if we go back to the original piece of this bill, it's just to be honest and disclose it, and if somebody's concerned, they can ask for it to be redirected.
Mr. Hesse, was that a question or a statement? Or
just a statement.
Okay. Well, thank you. Representative Anderson?
I actually have a good friend that works at a call center, and one of the concerns that she had expressed is they're advised, especially the female operators, that not to give out the location necessarily because of fear for their own public safety. Is that a concern for the businesses at all?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I know some call centers have in their contracts the fact that they don't want customer service representatives providing the information about where they're located for those reasons. Not all do, but some certainly do.
Thank you. Yeah. Anything else? Representative Tilbury?
Could you just explain, I'm not understanding that piece about the safety aspect. Can you share that more with me and what that totally means if someone says where they're calling from? Help me understand that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tilbury.
Mr. Essie.
Not every, people call centers for a variety of reasons, and sometimes because they're not happy with a product or service, and calls can get difficult. So it's an employee safety issue that they don't want to know where people are working at all times.
Thank you, Mr. Hesse. Chair Mulry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hesse, the bill just requires the identification of the state or country. I wouldn't think that would really scare somebody. If I was somebody working in New York City, Chicago, Minneapolis, I wouldn't care that they knew it was in Minnesota or something like that.
Representative Atkins?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mulry, it's a point well taken with regard to Representative Anderson's comment, and I think if we were identifying you know, specifically where what address people were on, I definitely share the concern. But Representative Mullery got the language right. This just simply says what state or country they're in is all that they're being asked to disclose.
And okay. Mr. Chair, an earlier version of the bill had more detailed information. That's one of the things that we worked with the author on to eliminate. Okay.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hesse. Is there any other testifiers or anybody out in the crowd that wants to speak their piece? Or okay. Is there any further discussion up here? Representative Zeller?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. My good friend, Chair Atkins, as a consumer, newly found consumer protector, you called me, you said, I thought you Republicans didn't care about consumers when I brought our mortgage bill forward. So someone new to the fray, I thank you, but I got to differ with you on this. And actually, I did go and found some data from Forbes and a couple other newspapers here about the theft problems, identity theft problems in the United States, or in this case, the UK versus India, where, if we haven't said it here a few times, we probably have intimated that's what we're meaning with the call centers in that area. And our good friends at Ernst & Young found that the Western corporate managers that were surveyed, two-thirds of them expected the same thing that I think we're kind of hinting around here about the fraud happening in emerging markets and not here, when actually they found 75% of the fraud occurred in the developed markets, primarily the UK and the US. So I'm all for the keeping the consumer's data private and the breaches, but, you know, it's our own backyard that's probably worse than the folks that we're maybe targeting in this bill. So that part of it's a big concern. And I just had one little quote from our friend Thomas Friedman in a big, thick book that Ron Abrams told me to read, The World is Flat. He said, I'm sorry, Your Honor, just in case.
Have you been in front of them?
So I said, just in case. The job of politicians, this is for Mr. Friedman's The World is Flat book, the job of politicians in America, whether at the local, state, or national level, should be, in good part, to help educate and explain to people what the world they are living in and what they need to do if they want to thrive within it. And one problem we have today, he continues, though, is that too many American politicians don't seem to have a clue about the world being flat. As venture capitalist John Doerr, not sure who this man is, once remarked to me, he talked to the leadership in China and they are all engineers and they get what's going on immediately. The Americans don't, because they're all lawyers. And it, for this committee, I think on each side we're equally offensive when it comes to lawyers. But the point of the bill is great, but I don't see the need. And unfortunately, I think I'd agree with Representative Tilbury. We don't know either way and it may just not be necessary. Again, Mr. Chairman, with all deference, I can't support the bill. I think you've done some great things to change it, but we're still, almost a solution in search of a problem. So, members, I thank you for the time, Mr. Chairman, Chair Atkins, but I will respectfully disagree that we really don't need to do this bill.
Thank you, Representative Zellers.
Just to conclude the comments, then. Unless
okay. Is there any other questions before we... Okay, go ahead, Chair Atkins.
Chair, Representative Zellers, the point I would make is you just made the argument for the bill. If you think it's more dangerous to send your information to developed countries, maybe finding out there's a U.S.-based location is a place you don't want to send your information. You'd rather send it abroad. But at least, and to paraphrase Thomas Friedman, because I don't have the book with me, he's a big believer in full disclosure, that consumers deserve all the information so that they can make a knowledgeable decision. I won't go through point by point, but I'll make couple quick comments. One is some of the opponents made it sound like we're trying to put foreign call centers out of business. This doesn't do that. It doesn't outlaw them at all. Just tell the truth is all that's required. People vote with their pocketbook. Again, same deal. Full disclosure. Voters ought to have all the information. The costs it'll impose on businesses or consumers. If it costs a little bit more to tell the truth, I think it's probably worth it. But I can't imagine that being asked the question where you're located and having to answer that question or give a response about where your location is in the U.S. is going to cost that much more money. And finally, inconveniencing customers was the last argument they made. That's only if the customer affirmatively decides to take them up on the offer to call their U.S.-based location. If they don't want to, they don't have to, but at least they got that option. With that, I'd renew my motion to pass this bill, pass it on to public safety and consumer, or public safety and civil justice, and appreciate your support.
Okay, thank you, Chair Atkins. Chair Atkins has moved his bill as amended. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The bill is passed. Chair Atkins, should I give it a big tap? Okay. Good job. I just want to tell everybody thank you. Being nice to me as well, but thank you for the testifiers. Nice job, and so we get to see this next week in Chair Mulry's. So we're adjourned.